Hey guys, it's Rocky. You're listening to the Yo Rocco podcast. Today I'm talking to Adam Walker Cleveland, who is a pastor in Winnetka, Illinois. Adam is well known to lots of people through his Pomo Musings blog, which he's had for, gosh, well over a decade, and has taken on all kinds of controversial subjects and kind of established himself as a voice, a progressive voice within the PCUSA and the emerging church conversation back when that was a pretty prominent thing. Today I'm talking to him about sketching. He's, in the last year, really taken on first sketchnoting and then sketching as an art form for its own sake and for a way to enhance his ministry. And it's been really fun to watch because he shared a lot of it on Facebook. And we had a really great conversation about it, and I'm happy to share it with you. So without further ado, here's Adam. Thanks for listening. All right. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. And congratulations on getting Caleb down for a nap so quickly.
thank you. I'm not sure how I did it, but he's asleep.
Well, we're not sure how long it'll last, right? So we'll be quick.
Right.
Is he homesick?
He is. I don't know if he's really sick, but I think he was trying to get a sick day.
well, it worked.
It did. It did work.
All right. Well, I hope he feels better if he is in fact sick. So my podcast, what I'm doing is talking to people who are doing interesting projects, who are, you know, doing work that interests me, and talking to them about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And my Facebook feed for your profile started to fill up months ago with all of these sketches that you'd been doing, and that's kept up for the last several months. And so I'm interested in talking to you about all of this sketching that you're doing and why you're doing it and where it came from. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it's great.
So it appeared to me that, like, you started with sketch noting, right?
Right. Yeah. I had, yes, and that was, that kind of originated from an artist and author, Mike Rohde, was his name, and someone who I had just kind of randomly connected with online for years ago and just kind of kept up with, and saw that he always loved the kind of the Moleskine note-taking sketching that he did. And so he came out with a book called The Sketch Note Handbook. And I got that and then just sort of dove into taking these sketch notes. Other people, you know, just call them doodles, doodling, but just a way of taking visual notes. And so I just started, I would watch TED Talks and at home, and I would try and take some of these sketch notes. Anytime I went to go hear a lecture, if I was at a conference and somebody was preaching, I would try it to hear different. I would do it with different conference presenters, and so even presbytery meetings. Even presbytery meetings. I was trying to sketch note, and so you know, I think the way that Mike Rohde describes how he got into it is similar. It makes sense for me because, you know, I used to be the guy who, you know, before I was, you know, all into Twitter and social media, I would go to these conferences with my laptop and I would sit there and I would just take endless, copious notes of all of the presenters and talks. And I realize not everybody does that, but I, for some reason, I felt like I'm paying for this conference. I want to get a lot out of it.
Get your money's worth.
Seriously.
I totally do that. Yeah, I'm a big note taker.
So I would leave with just, you know, these documents just, you know, filled with notes, and I never looked back at them. Like,
right.
I never, you know, never once went back to look at any of that stuff. And so, but what I found is I look back at these sketch notes all the time. And I'm reminded of the things that I took away from those talks, the insights, the things that I learned. And there's something about the process of doing that in a visual way. It's a very different experience when you're watching a TED Talk to be able to just pause it, you know, draw the symbol or graphic that I wanted to draw, push play. But when you're live sketchnoting and when I'm at conferences, like instead of previously, I would just be kind of just listening and just writing down nonstop. When you're sketchnoting, it really causes you to have to focus a lot more, and you pay a lot more attention to try and grab what those kernels of those golden nuggets are from the whatever talk or sermon that you're hearing.
So you just must be drawing really quickly, right? Because you don't want to miss the next thing coming up.
Right, totally. And so there's times when I'll, you know, I'll do, so when I've been at conferences, I'll just do my sketch notes with pen, and then I'll go back and do, you know, add some watercolor, add some color markers to it later. It's kind of an interesting transition, because I went from taking notes nonstop to then, you know, kind of always being on the Twitter feed at these conferences about and tweeting things and I liked that, but what I found was that, you know, I would get off in some other side conversations and kind of lose track of what was being presented. And so now that I'm doing the sketch noting, I mean, I have my phone in my pocket. I mean, I can't even, it's, you know, it's not possible to keep up with the Twitter feed and also be sketch noting at the same time.
Right, and it must be engaging a different part of your brain, right?
It is, yeah, totally.
So you listen differently to what's being said, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the major difference, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, for me, it just causes me to sort of just really slow down and to listen. I'm not even sure how I can explain it, but it is definitely listening in a different way.
Yeah. I of course saw your writing about sketch notes and the early things that you posted of your own examples, and I got Rohde's book and I read it and I tried it a few times, and it definitely engages a different part of your brain. You have to pay attention differently. I'm not an artist, like I'm not a drawer, and I know that that's not required. But I just, for me, I couldn't make it work. Like the anxiety that I was spending this time drawing a symbol or something, and other things were being said that I wasn't writing down, like, drove me crazy. Do you have that problem?
Yeah, I mean, there have been occasions where, I either have that problem where I start drawing something and then I realize that I need to kind of quickly finish that up if I want to remember what someone just said, or I'll be taking notes and then I'll realize that, man, you know, really, this sketch note is really pretty text heavy and looks like just kind of regular notes, and then I'll start getting down on myself, like, come on, man, use more symbols, or get those
draw boxes around the words.
That's right. Do some cross-hatching.
Cross-hatching? Cross-hatching? I don't even know what that is.
It's a way of drawing lines to create shadows and dimension. So you just draw lines, and then I have
a picture in front of me of one of the drawings that you did that you put on your Facebook page, and you asked, is there such a thing as too much cross-hatching? It's a picture of a lion.
That's right.
So is there?
I don't know. I mean, someone commented and said, yes, there is, but they didn't want to go into more details. So that apparently they may have some strong feelings about cross-hatching.
Yes, there is, and you've just done it.
Yes. Maurice Sendak on Where the Wild Things.
Yeah.
He is an amazing artist, and I always knew that, but then now that I'm getting into this more, when I read that book and look at those illustrations, he does some serious cross-hatching, and the line work that he does is just really detailed and brilliant. So I feel like I'm becoming more aware of, as I'm reading Caleb, these picture books, that, you know, there are some just amazing artists and illustrations that go into these. And then I read some other ones and I'm like, man, I could draw that.
So you are reading kids' books with an eye for the illustrations,
yeah,
more so than for the story.
Yeah, my wife does a great job picking out good stories, and then I appreciate the artwork. But you know that, but that's kind of, I mean, that's been part of the transition in how this has all played out in my life recently. Was, you know, like you mentioned, like beginning with the sketch notes, really enjoying that. And part of what I like about them too is that, you know, at the end of the conference, you know, I have kind of a, you know, an archived a piece of art, you know, that I can look back on and that I can then, you know, share through social media. And have had some folks that, you know, last year, for example, at the Next conference and at the Progressive Youth Ministry conference, you know, at the Progressive Youth Ministry Conference, I took sketch notes of almost every talk that I went to and then put them all together in the end and kind of had a PDF that was available for folks. And I did the same thing for the next conference, although I wasn't even at the next conference. I was just sketchnoting while watching the live stream.
Oh, really?
So that's kind of a fun kind of artifact to have at the end of like an event or a conference.
Well, and the sketch note's not over when the event's over, right? You said you'll go back in and add color and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you doing these with the intention of distributing them to other people? It's not. I mean, it sounds like it's not just mainly for you.
Yeah, I mean, I always assume that I will share my work, but I don't. But when I'm taking them, it's not like an objective. It's not like I'm a journalist, you know, trying to have kind of an objective view on like a presentation that was given. If I disagree with somebody, you know, that's going to be conveyed through the sketch note. So you might get kind of the Progressive Youth Ministry sketch notes, but it's as through the lens of Adam Walker Cleveland, which you may or may not like.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You must have done art like in school, right? I mean, this is not like your first entry into doing this stuff. You must have done this earlier in your life.
I drew a ton when I was a kid. And my mom is just now kind of scanning pictures of random stuff that she finds around the house. But, you know, I was really big into art. I had a book that was, I think it was based on a TV show, and the book is called Draw Squad.
Okay.
And it was this TV show with this guy who wore this really cool, colorful uniform, and he was like the cool drawing artist. And he had all these little kids in the show that would do these drawings. And so I have that book that I actually still have. That's just kind of a foundations of drawing book. And I went through that as a kid, you know, a ton. I also took calligraphy classes.
Oh wow!
With my mom, and I see that definitely coming through, and just my interest in typography and the lettering.
Yeah.
And I used to when I was a kid, we had these things called young authors conferences. So I used to write stories and illustrate them. So I mean, I definitely had. That's always been an interest of mine, and I, you know, over the years, I've just lost that. I've never really been doing anything with that.
Why did you lose it? Just too many other things?
Too many other things. I'm sure that you know, I got on the internet when I was a freshman in high school and started designing web pages, and I think that move to computers probably drew me away from actually liking kind of actual paper and actual pencil and pen.
Okay. So yeah.
I'm sure that's part of it.
So yeah, but that's still a graphic kind of pursuit. That's always been, you've always been kind of like a visual graphic artist, right?
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. It's always been a passion of mine.
And you've been, I mean, you've been blogging and with a blog that you designed yourself, and so I'm interested in the design component of this. Like, you've been doing this for over a decade, right? So mm-hmm. Your call to ministry and your work as a pastor has always had, to some degree, this kind of like graphic visual art piece to it, but it seems just like much more intentional now.
Yeah, and I think it's always been a part of my ministry, and maybe just haven't been sharing it as much, you know. So, you know, for any events that I do, or that like the theology pubs that I have run, the tavern talks that I do now, you know, I always want to design the posters for those, and potentially may put in a little more time than I need into getting that designed just the way I want, because I think that aesthetic is just really important. So yeah, I mean, that graphic design piece has always been a part of I've found ways to use it in my ministry. Mm-hmm. I think now I'm having you know, I'm having fun trying to figure out how to incorporate this more tactile art into ministry in some new ways.
Why do you think the graphic is so important, like for a theology pub, for example?
I mean, I think for myself, you know, I'm just drawn to beautiful aesthetic artwork and you know, well, good looking posters and good use of typography, and that's just kind of how I'm wired. I'm guessing that there may be others who would be drawn to a good looking poster versus one that, you know, looks like it was put together in 5 minutes in Microsoft Word.
Right. So a crappy looking poster might indicate to somebody that that's not worth their time.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, you know, and that goes for the same thing. I mean, as I look at church websites, I am of the opinion that if the church has a really crappy website, it's probably not a great church.
I'm glad my church recently redid our website then.
Yeah, exactly. And I've actually gotten in trouble with that kind of a perception before. And I know that's not true, but I mean, I think I'm of the, you know, the generation that places a high importance on that aesthetic. And so that does lead people, I think, to believe that the quality of the content is going to be based on partially on, you know, how well you can present yourself.
Well, the visual matters more than ever, right? I mean, this was like Neil Postman's. Did you ever read Amusing Ourselves to Death?
I didn't.
So this is Neil Postman's like screed against TV in the mid-80s about how we were leaving behind a text-based society and how it was going to, you know, demean our discourse and everything. But it's even more so visual now. I don't know that he was right that it's actually demeaned our discourse or whatever, but I mean, it seems like if the visual piece of whatever you're trying to communicate is not high quality, then you're going to really turn people off.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, so talk to me about how you got from just doing these sketchnoting at events to actually just doing sketching things for their own sake.
So two names then is Mike Rohde, who I've already mentioned, and then there's right. Paul Supase, who I think a lot of people may know from the Animate curriculum that came out of Spark House. He was the primary illustrator for a lot of their stuff.
Okay.
And is an artist that I just love his style. And so I think, you know, I've known both of these guys and just watched their art, and then as I was getting into the sketch notes and wanting to be able to add more, like to draw people or to draw more different symbols or pictures, icons, I just had this realization that I kind of needed to go back to the basics a little bit and work on my just kind of basic drawing skills. And so that's where the Presbytery of Chicago comes in and is offered this amazing opportunity this past year to, they gave out, I think it was 30 clergy self-renewal grants for $1,000 each. And so
what a great idea.
Oh, it's amazing. So you could apply to this to get this grant, and people used it for, I mean, for any number of things, from like signing up to CrossFit. Somebody I know bought a motorcycle with theirs because they'd always wanted a motorcycle. So I was getting into this and was really wanting to take an art class and didn't have necessarily the funds, and then this came about. So I applied and got the $1,000, and so basically I used that money to sign up for a couple different online art classes.
Oh yeah.
So I was part of one class called Sketchbook School, which took you through I think it was a 6 or 8 week class. So you had assignments that you did. You would upload your artwork to their Facebook page and to the online thing. You would get critique from other people in the class and the teachers who were doing the class. So that was a really, there were some artists that were the teachers that I just really like. So that was a cool opportunity to have. I signed up for a couple other classes that I haven't taken yet, but.
Was the Sketchbook School a Mike Rohde thing?
No, it's not. It's a whole different group of artists. I mean, once you start getting into this, kind of this genre, there's just an incredible amount of artists who do a lot of this kind of stuff. There's, you know, you can Google urban sketchers and see some amazing you know, folks that just gather together at a random in front of a unique looking building, and they'll all sketch the building together. And so then I was kind of getting more into some architectural sketching. And then I used a lot of the money for, I mean, I have enough supplies to last me a long time.
So you bought a lot of supplies with that.
I bought a lot of supplies. I'm sure that I did watercolors when I was a little kid, but I certainly haven't used them in, 25 years.
Right.
And so I have kind of invested in watercolor as kind of my main main medium. And I know you appreciate a good fountain pen.
I do.
So I have been
Kaweco.
That's right. Mine is the Lamy Safari, and I have invested into, I mean, I can't tell you how many pens I have right now, just different brands, different styles, and I have this one fountain pen with like three different kinds of ink that I'm trying, and I tell you, it gives me a flashback to like when I was in maybe fourth or fifth grade, and I don't know if you ever experienced this or went through this phase, but mechanical pencils.
Oh, yeah.
Were like the thing, and it was always this, you know, sort of competition between me and my friends to see who had the coolest mechanical pencil. So yeah. we would go to like the office supply store after school, and we would just spend, you know, hours trying all of the pencils and seeing who could get the, you know, the one that had the most features. And I remember spending like 15, 20 bucks on like mechanical pencils when I was a kid. So anyway, I'm experiencing that same fascination with pens and ink and different kind of markers.
But that's a big, I mean, that's a big part of the work. I mean, I wanted to ask you about the equipment that you're using, because, you know, I think a lot of people would consider something like this and think, well, oh, I don't have the right equipment. Well, I mean, the reality is you don't have to have really great equipment to just start something like this, right? But
right, totally.
But part of what's fun about this is playing with different equipment. That's part of any artistic or creative pursuit, is the tools that you're using. I mean, you mentioned the fountain pens, and I found these Kaweco fountain pens, and I'm not a big fountain pen guy, but this thing has a cap that screws on it. You can carry around in your pocket, and it's awesome. And in fact, I can't find it today, and I'm kind of freaking out. So, like, you can become dependent on the equipment. I mean, it was in college for me that I got really into pens, and it was like my thing to have a pen clipped on my shirt. And it always had to be the same kind of pen. It was these Pilot V-Ball extra fine point pens that had the little window in the side so you could see the ink levels, and they don't make those anymore.
Yeah.
They're gone. But I used to do the same thing, spend all kinds of time in the office supply stores looking for that specific pen. And like, if I found it, I would like buy as many as I could afford in one sitting.
Right.
But you can't get them anymore. So what is the other basics of the equipment that you bought with that grant and that you're using?
I bought a lot of paper. I bought a lot of sketchbooks. I bought a couple different sets of watercolors. I bought some different markers. I bought some watercolor pencils. I bought some nice colored pencils. I actually bought a somewhat expensive stylus for my iPad when I was trying to get into some digital sketchnoting, but it hasn't stuck as much as actual paper.
Why not?
I don't know. The precision is not there.
Yeah.
And I think it wants to be, but it's just, you know, I bought like eight different styluses and returned seven of them, and I thought I picked with the best one, but the precision just isn't there. And you know, I've never been someone who, like, my wife is someone who, it took her a really, really long time before she bought a Kindle. She loved holding books and feeling the paper and the smell of the book, and I've never been someone like that. I just, you know, whatever. The e-books have been, I prefer those much more to traditional books. But I tell you, there is something about a Moleskine and my Lamy Safari and just the way that ink comes out on the paper, it's just it totally different.
It's much more tactile, and I wonder if that affects your retention of what you're working on, right? Mm-hmm.
And I've done some stuff on the iPad, and I do kind of enjoy it, but it's really easy to I find when I do the iPad, I erase constantly. And I don't, and when I'm using the fountain pen, I don't have that luxury, and so you just have to work with what happens and turn your mistakes into part of what you're creating.
Well, where are you doing all this work? Like, you have this great picture that you put up recently of all these art materials all over. It looks like your kitchen table, and you wrote, "Who needs an art studio anyway?" Like, you don't. It doesn't seem like you have a dedicated space where you're doing all this stuff.
No, I don't. It's our kitchen table.
How's that working?
Well, it works out okay. I went through a bit of a phase where, you know, it was like I would just have everything out, and then it'd be dinner time, and Sarah would be like, "Dude, seriously?" And so I'd have to like throw it all on a chair, and then we'd be losing a chair in the living room. And I've worked out a way now where I just get out what I need at a time, and I'm better about putting things away. But it would be wonderful someday to have kind of a dedicated space. But this works.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you know, I used to carry around. When I was first getting started, I carried around all these pens with me and different notebooks. But really, when I go somewhere now, I just grab my Moleskine and a fountain pen, and that's pretty much what I stick to. And sometimes I'll leave it black and white, but sometimes I'll go back in and add some watercolor here or there.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, you're going to be at the Next Church conference in a couple of weeks, right?
I am going to be there and at the Progressive Youth Ministry.
So we can look forward to all kinds of sketch notes and sketches from those events.
That's right. That's right. So good. I will definitely be there sketchnoting.
Well, a couple of other things that you did, you've put on your Facebook page about your drawings is you started to make these little videos, like these time-lapse videos of the drawing.
Yeah.
Right? You did a few of those. What's the goal of that for you?
I'm not sure what the goal is. I mean, I guess part of it was just the fun of figuring out how to do that. And I've always loved watching those time lapse videos of, you know, of people drawing like that. And it's just kind of fun to because, you know, when you do those time lapse videos, you know, it's actually taking a really long time.
Right. It's a lot of time that's elapsing.
It is a lot of time. But to kind of see, just sort of to be able to step back and just kind of see the progression of the drawing and I don't know, it kind of helps me think about how to do things either differently the next time or the same way.
Well, when I first started watching the first one, I expected like a voiceover to start, right? It's like those,
right.
I don't know who does those. They take the audio of TED Talks and they illustrate them in a time-lapse kind of fashion and it all syncs up.
Nice.
I wonder if that's something that you'll do eventually, like with time-lapse drawing, like overlay some kind of talk or a sermon or something that you've done illustrated by a drawing.
Yeah, that is something that would be interesting to do. So we'll see if I ever get into that.
Like you need more things to be working on.
Right.
Well, you've mentioned a couple. You mentioned Mike Rohde and Paul Supersay. Are there other artists that you're trying to like emulate? I mean, you know, the reason I ask is I talked to Landon Whitsitt a couple weeks ago about music that he's trying to do, and he said very explicitly, like, I'm copying people who I really admire and whose music I like as a way of just sort of getting started. Are you doing the same kind of thing with visual art and sketching, like trying to...
Oh, yeah.
So who are those people that you're copying?
Yeah, no, I am definitely, and I think that's a great way to start. I mean, I don't know, have you read the book Austin Kleon's book, Steal Like an Artist?
No, but Landon used that quote about, you know, great artists steal, right?
Right, totally. And that book by Austin Kleon is really great and is really all about this. But I think, you know, I'm at the stage now where I know that there are certain styles that I like, and so I am trying to sort of, you know, copy, emulate them to, and with the hopes of kind of through that, you know, figuring out what my own style is. So I have posted some things on Facebook and said, you know, with apologies to Paul Supersay, I realize this is basically just copying a piece of art that you did.
Right. Does he respond to you?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's okay with it. But there are a couple different artists. One is a guy named Danny Gregory.
Okay.
He has a book out called An Illustrated Life, which is actually a really interesting. It's a compilation of I don't even know how many, but a compilation of a lot of different sketchbook artists who are doing some really cool stuff. And then I found what I'm really drawn to is really, really detailed pen and ink drawings. So there's a guy named, and I can send you his name later, but his name is Matthias Adolfsson.
Okay.
Who does these incredible, fantastical, imaginary kind of illustrations that are so amazingly detailed, and uses watercolor with them in just some really fun ways. He was one of the teachers in the sketchbook school that I took.
Oh yeah.
And then another one of those teachers and just a fabulous artist is a guy named Tommy Kane, and he just came out with a book called An Excuse to Draw, which is just filled with really kind of the style that I'm looking at in terms of just very, very detailed pen and ink with watercolor, lots of cross-hatching, and just a lot of detail. So Tommy Kane's thing is like his first task that he always gives anyone in his class is to sit down and draw your kitchen. And to draw every single item in your kitchen, you know, and so that's, you know, that's an area that could be filled with lots of details and things sitting out. And
so you did that.
I tried to do that just recently, so
I would have to organize my kitchen and clean it up really well first.
Well, I would be lying if I said that I didn't do that a little bit too
far. Move all the little trinkets off to the side.
Right.
Well, you've read a lot of books, obviously, and you just dropped the names of three different illustrators really quickly. It seems like, I mean, you're putting a lot of time into this right now.
It is. It does seem to be where a lot of where my energy is, I think I would you know, go as far as to say that it's I think becoming kind of a spiritual practice. I think the one piece of the art journey that I didn't mention yet was those Zentangles, those really kind of intricate pattern and line work, and I've done a couple of those that have been, you know, fairly intricate, and I think, you know, I can really get lost in that process of creating when I'm doing those. And have really found that to be a way of almost kind of contemplative, you know, meditation, and just kind of losing myself in the art.
Do you have a guide for that, or a model of a person who does that, or who taught you about that you're following?
Not really. When I sat down to do my first one, which is actually I think my favorite, it was a fairly big one. I think it was like an 8x8. Size 8-inch by 8-inch size of paper, but I just like went to Google and typed in Zentangle patterns, and saw some different patterns that people did, and then just kind of, I don't know, just kind of got lost in that and creating some of my own. And
so, what is it? I mean, like, what is a Zentangle basically?
I think a Zentangle. So people could draw anything. You might draw a picture of a leaf, and then you would fill up the entire leaf with these different shapes and patterns and lines and circles and just different kind of textures. So somebody might draw. I mean, I've seen people who draw actual pictures of like an animal, like a lion, and then they use kind of Zentangle patterns to kind of color the lion. I have just kind of done more just very abstract, like I'll just draw like the shape of a leaf on a piece of paper, and then I'll fill that in, and then I'll just kind of start drawing some lines and some circles and kind of just let things grow out from the middle of the drawing.
Yeah. Are you collecting all of these online anywhere? I mean, you put a lot of the stuff that you draw on Facebook. So much so that it almost seems like sharing your work publicly on social media is a big part of why you're doing it. But there must be stuff that you do that you never put online.
Yeah, there is some, and I haven't figured out the best way if there's not really one place right now where I'm putting dedicated to putting stuff up. I do share a lot of it on Facebook, but Instagram is probably a lot of where I share a lot of the kind of work in progress, right. and some final versions of things.
Yeah, and you have an art and design page on your blog, Pomo Musings. Is that a space that's going to feature more and more of that work?
That's a great question. I think I kind of forgot that I had that page. But that should be a place that does feature more of that.
I'm looking at it right now.
I see,
you have a post up now, the Art as Prayer post, that has looks like a stained glass pane that you drew and filled it in with watercolor.
Right.
And then a Zentangle at the bottom. That's a Zentangle, right?
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Yes. Yeah, I wonder if that space could become, like, do you plan to make that like a gallery where you feature some of your work, or have you thought that far ahead yet?
You know, I haven't thought that far ahead yet. You know, it's funny. You know, I've had some people who a couple of the icons that I had done. I had a few friends that were like, "Man, I'd really love that's great. I'd love a print of that." And that's the piece that I haven't ventured into yet in terms of figuring out the way to, you know, obviously I'm scanning the stuff right now, but figuring out a good way to print it and to share, you know. I don't want to say that I necessarily want to monetize this and figure out, you know, if I want to open like an Etsy shop.
That's not bad, right? I mean, you say that like you should be embarrassed of wanting to monetize it, but is that bad?
No, actually, I don't think it is, and that's probably something that I would just need to get over and own up. And I think part of that is. You know, I think I only just recently, like in some of my like online bios, you know, I started using the phrase artist. And I think that's, you know, some people say, I don't know, can you really call yourself an artist? And I think that's a really interesting question in terms of...
Well, yeah, who gets to make that call?
Right, exactly. but I think that there's, you know, I think that's part of it is just realizing, okay, well, you know, I'm creating art. I'm an artist, and yeah, maybe somebody actually would, you know, would like a copy of one of these things, and maybe they'd actually pay money for it. So that's, you know, that's not a bad thing.
That must be a big shift mentally. I mean, I remember there was a period of about 6 or 7 months when we moved to California when I wasn't in a call in a church, and I was trying to piece together some freelance writing gigs, right? And I remember the first time I called somebody on a story that I'd pitched to a publication, and they'd actually said, yeah, go ahead and write it. And so I called this source, and I told them I was a freelance writer writing a piece for X publication.
Right.
And just telling somebody I'm a freelance writer, like, I had all this confidence to ask them all kinds of things that I wasn't going to ask them otherwise. Just, like, when you start to call yourself something seriously, you take it more seriously, don't you?
Yeah. No, I think so. And that could have been part of, you know, why I felt like I could then claim that. And so maybe I do deserve an Etsy shop.
Well, the people who deserve Etsy shops are the ones who make them, right?
That's right.
You open it yourself. I just, you know, that designation about artist is one that a lot of people I talk to, it just comes up over and over again, because we have this hang up about artist as kind of like an elite, specialized title that only some people get to have.
Right.
And I think it keeps most of us from actually doing stuff we'd like to do, because we feel like it's not professional grade or it's not artistic enough. And so, oh, it's a hobby or it's a whatever. But I mean, who establishes those standards, and who gets to say who's an artist and who's not?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you have this really great post on the art and creativity part of your blog, where you spell out that drawing and sketching is kind of the place that you're finding creativity now, not so much in writing, not in the blogging. You wrote that back in November, and it seems to me like that trajectory has continued for you now 5 or 6 months later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's why I that's why I'm doing a blog series now, to get other people to write for me in my blog. I thank you for contributing.
Yes, of course.
yeah, you know, and I go back and forth on that. I think since then I've written a couple posts that I you know, that I was glad that I wrote and enjoyed writing. So I mean, there is still part of me that likes to write, but yeah, I mean, after a day of work, coming home, having dinner, putting Caleb to bed, and then sitting down, whereas, you know, for the past, well, ever since I've owned a laptop, I would at the end of the day open up my laptop and just start, you know, dinking around and doing stuff. You know, my laptop stays in my bag most of the time now, and I get out my Moleskine.
Interesting.
And that's a huge shift for me.
Are you noticing like other effects of that? I mean, it's kind of a big narrative arc, I think, out there now, that technology is taking over our life, and at the end of the day you end up with your laptop or your iPad in bed before you fall asleep, and how terrible that is for you. But so you've kind of experienced moving away from that, though not for that purpose, but because you were interested in something else. But I mean, when people say, you know, it's really better to not be using all that technology all the time, like at home at night.
Right.
Are you more sympathetic to that claim now than before, because you're in a notebook at night?
Maybe a little bit more, but, you know, once I'm done with my drawing, I get in bed, pull out my phone, and go through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, go to sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is go through Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So,
yeah, I think it would be hard for people who know you to believe that you're doing less social media than you were before, right?
Right. Although I will say, you know, since getting into art more, and you know, I and maybe people notice, I don't know, but I spend a lot less time on Twitter now. I used to be a lot more active, and I find that most of my time is spent on Facebook and Instagram, probably because those are easier places for visual things to be seen.
Yeah.
And my Twitter usage is generally to open it up and just see if I had any mentions or if anybody had any questions or messages. And that's been a shift too that I've noticed, that I've just spent less time on that specific one, unless I'm at a conference or following a hashtag.
Right, because then that's where all the snark is.
Right,
so the Twitter conversation.
Right, the one bummer about sketchnoting at events is that I do feel like I'm missing out a little bit on that yeah. Snark, which I loved contributing to.
Sure. Well, and the sketching that you're doing is all very earnest. There's nothing sarcastic or there's no commentary in it. Right. It's just, it looks to me like it's just earnest art for its own sake.
It is, although I will, if there is something that deserves some snark, and I feel like I feel strongly enough that that should be put down into paper and pen, then I will do that.
You talked about the theology pub posters and wanting to make sure those look really good, and you've also got this picture on Facebook of a drawing that you gave to kids when you did a children's time about Jesus walking on the water.
Yeah, yeah.
What other ways are you finding to incorporate this sketching into pastoral ministry?
One thing that I did last summer, which I think was just a total bomb, but we took a page in the bulletin, and each week there was a different kind of prompt for some doodling during worship and some different opportunities and to either reflect on the sermon or to, I forget what each of them were, but we did it for about 4 weeks. I don't think, you know, maybe a handful of people, one or two times, did it.
Did you invite people to like turn them in or something?
No, well, I mean, I invited them to, you know, if they did it, to show me, and just so we could, you know, kind of look at it together. And I put colored pencils and markers in all the pews, and
wow,
they were basically in the same spots after worship as they were at the beginning of worship. So I don't think that that was that happened very much.
What do you ascribe that to? I mean, maybe. I mean, is it just that people don't more fewer people than you would think are comfortable doing that, or is that just not a way of participating in worship that people are used to?
Yeah, probably both of those, and I think, you know, there's still, I think for some folks there's still the stigma that if you are, you know, if you're drawing or doing something in worship, then you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, that was one thing that kind of bombed. You know, I will say that in some of the you know, the book Praying in Color.
Oh yeah.
If you're familiar with that, you know, that has a lot of similar connections to some of this kind of like Zentangles and kind of pattern design work. And so I've used that more with kids, and actually just used that last night with some adults and some alternative prayer practices. And so, you know, I find ways to incorporate some of that sketching and sort of Zentangles in helping people think of different ways to pray.
But the context of a Sunday morning worship service is a bigger leap for people to do that.
Yeah, I think it is. We also tried another kind of art project as kind of an Advent prayer station, and it didn't really go over. So I think you know, if you're in the right context where that's just kind of more in the DNA of your church, then that might fly better.
Interesting. Well, you work with youth too, right? So is this a thing that some teenagers respond to better than adults, or do you just not see a difference?
No, I've seen the teenagers respond better.
Like they're actually willing to try.
Yeah, they're willing to try it, and spend some time with it.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I wanted to ask you about the sharing of this stuff on Facebook. I've mentioned this before that it seems to me like a lot of, I mean, you share a lot of the work that you're doing on Facebook, so much so that it does seem like sharing it with people and getting people's feedback is a big part of the process for you. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's been fun in the process of doing that. And you know, and part of that is probably, you know, I think I was drawn into this by seeing the work of you know, Mike Rohde and Paul Supase and just kind of being drawn into that. I have seen a few people since I started this also kind of, you know, kind of get excited about the style and the kind of the way that I was using art, and they have also now started to pick that up.
Really?
Well, I think maybe a good example of that was there was a day a couple months ago where some lovely people decided to sketch me.
I don't know who those people were.
but there were some really good ones. There was a couple where I was like, man, that person probably spent like an hour or so on that sketch.
And others where it was obvious that they did it in about 3.5 minutes.
Yes, yes. No, we won't name any names.
No, not at all. But that was in response to this thing that you started to do where you took people's Facebook profile pictures and you made watercolors out of them.
Yeah,
And in my case, because you did one of me, I didn't know you were doing that. It just showed up on Facebook. Were you just sort of sitting at home and you're like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll make a watercolor of somebody's Facebook profile and just put it on Facebook.
That's right. I wasn't happy with how my people were looking that I was drawing, and so I figured, you know, maybe if I had some you know, some actual models to to base off of. So I basically just went through and looked for the best looking people in my Facebook feed. And Rocky, you were right.
Wow.
Up.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
So, but you know, and I had wanted to keep doing that. I haven't done one in a while. But you know, I think that I probably did 6 or 7 of them. I had two friends, John Vest being one of them, that I drew him, and then I was like, oh, I can't share that on Facebook. So I texted it to him, and I was like, hey, dude, this is what I. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'll try again.
But you sent it to him anyway.
But I did.
You were doing it so that you would have a face to draw rather than trying to come up with your own.
Right. And looking at the different ones that I did, I mean, they're all pretty different. And I think,
yeah,
you know, so part of that was just trying to get practice with drawing different types of faces and different styles. Some of them were a little more cartoony than others. So Well, talking about it makes me want to go take my next victim.
Victim. Well said. No, not I don't. I wouldn't say victim at all. I think it was a. I think it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to give people. Another thing that's kind of ironic about it that I notice is that, you know, everything is so image based, like we said, and digital photography, of course, has totally changed the game. I have a good friend here in Claremont who's a photographer and has been for decades, and gets really really frustrated when I talk to him about a picture I saw on Instagram or something, right? Because digital photography and all of those tools have really changed, you know, film-based photography. Mm-hmm. What you've taken inspiration from, though, in a lot of these cases, is digital images as a source for your drawing.
Right.
That seems kind of funny to me.
In terms of like drawing like pictures.
Yeah, like there's a picture of you. The post on your website about the grant you got has a picture at the top of it of you drawing an icon off of your MacBook.
Right.
That's a great picture.
Yeah, well, I think it's just I'm looking at that now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a fun way to play with the mediums.
And those images are everywhere. I mean, yeah. Half the time if you do a Google search for something, well, every time you do a Google search for something, there's an image option and brings up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of images of it. But you're using that as a tool to do something that causes you to slow down and take a lot of time to be very careful with one particular image to draw it.
Right, right. Well, and last night I added some watercolor to this picture of the bean in Chicago that a couple months ago I went downtown with my in-laws and Caleb, and we went down there, and if I had gone down there by myself, you know, I probably would have, you know, set up shop and done some sketching there, but you know, as I had a 3-year-old in tow, that wasn't going to happen. So,
right.
So I had snapped that picture of what I wanted to sketch, and so just got around to then making a sketch based off of that.
And you pointed out a few particular features of it in the Facebook post that you said you really liked.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's very detailed. So where is this going for you? Is this something that you're just going to kind of keep on doing, or do you have like an intentional next thing you want to try?
I don't know. I mean, as I have kind of like, you know, that thought has kind of crossed my mind. I hope that it's not just a phase. And you know, maybe it's okay if it's not something that, you know, continues forever. I think for where I'm at now, and Caleb being 3, and you know, he likes to draw. We went to a coffee shop a couple weeks ago, and I bought him his own little sketchbook.
Oh wow.
And I thought, you know, I'm just going to see how this goes. And so I got him a donut, I got my coffee, I sat down at the window, and I was drawing the buildings across the street. I gave him his sketchbook, and he actually lasted for about a half hour.
Really?
That's drawing.
A long time when you're 3.
I know. And he was drawing little people and letters. And so I think as he gets to be interested in drawing more, I think that'll only increase my interest in it. So I guess I don't see it going away anytime soon.
Okay.
In terms of where it's going, I mean, I think like we mentioned, I think the thing that I do want to look into and play around with is trying to figure out, you know, if I do have certain prints or like these icons, that, you know, it'd be interesting, and I think I would be intrigued enough to, you know, to set up a shop and to see if anybody was interested in buying them.
Well, I wonder even about, you know, encouraging others or even teaching, right? I mean, what would you say to people who maybe have thought about this, you know, people in your congregation or people who are colleagues in ministry, for example, who would say, you know, I used to do art, but I kind of got away from it, and I've thought about sort of dabbling in it again, but I just don't have the time or whatever. Like, do you have advice for them based on your own experience?
This interest in art has, and specifically sharing it on Facebook, has led me to lots of conversations with people in the church who are, you know, artists or who used to be, and so, you know, we get into these fun conversations about watercolors and acrylics and the sketching that they see, and So that's been a fun point of connection. But I think, I think like I would just tell anybody in terms of, if this was a specific style that they were looking at getting into, then, there are a couple books that would be great to start with and basically to just dive in and start playing. I think when I got the watercolors and I started trying to figure them out for the first time, I think I was posting on Facebook and trying to look up on YouTube, like, how to use watercolors. And finally someone was like, dude, just start using them.
Just do it.
Just dip your brush in water and start painting something. And that's probably the best advice.
The fear is that I'm not doing it right, or there's some expertise out there that I'm missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
When really what's important is that you just start to do it and get familiar with it and get comfortable with it yourself.
Right.
And sharing it on Facebook, I'm a big Seth Godin guy. I talk about this all the time, and his whole thing is about shipping, right? Like, mm-hmm. You have to ship the work. That means you have to expose it to public scrutiny. That seems to be an important part of what you're doing, is putting it out there and inviting comment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was a big part of the online art class that I took, to, post everything, even if you thought it was crap, get it up there.
And the teachers required that.
Yeah, yeah, and to get that feedback, just like you would in an art class when you have critiques and, you have to kind of have some thick skin to hear people's thoughts, but it's always going to make you a better artist. I just think it's fun to share it.
And I think there are relatively few areas of pastoral work, for example, that give you that kind of critical feedback in a way that doesn't, in a way that's not, full of conflict or just, oh, that was nice. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
you're inviting specific kinds of feedback on specific features of the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had, like, through the Facebook posts of pictures, have you had negative feedback from people?
So I had one instance of a negative feedback from another pastor.
who he didn't like the drawing that you did? Was it a drawing of him?
No, it wasn't. But I think this is fine.
Or her? I'm sorry.
I think this is fine to say. So last year at the Progressive Youth Ministry Conference, there was a talk, and I'm blanking on his name, but there was a talk done on like hip hop culture.
Okay.
And in the talk, the speaker referenced the phrase "booty on a stick."
So how do you not draw that?
And so I didn't draw a real booty. I just drew an image and then wrote "booty on a stick," and I had someone who was really offended by that, and we had to talk through that.
Wow. See, I have the image in front of me of the sketch notes you did for that conference, and I can't find the booty on a stick line. How did I miss that?
I don't know. It's towards the end.
It's not in the same drawing as the one that says sex, like right in the middle, is it?
No, it's not. But there were a couple from that, I feel like, from that conference. That's not one of the things that you prepare for as a pastor, to be talking about booty on a stick in your office.
That was somebody in your congregation then?
Connected to, yes.
Yeah. Wow. And they sought you out and said they didn't like that.
They were very offended.
Wow. So did you just sort of say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again? Or did you say, well, here's the reason why I did it, and I'm sorry it bothered you?
Yeah, I mean, it was more just, I just setting the context for, hey, I was just drawing what was being said and talked about, and that led to an interesting conversation on the fact that, maybe we don't all need to be friends with each other on Facebook if there's going to be things like this that that create issues.
Are you still friends with that person on Facebook?
I'm not.
All right then.
But we have a fine relationship outside of Facebook, so
it all works. That's good. And you've not used the phrase "booty on a stick" in a drawing sense.
No, but I think I've just used it in this podcast 4 or 5 times.
Fantastic. Actually, I'm going to title it Booty on a Stick when I put it up. So, all right. Well, listen, you probably have to get back to Caleb. And I appreciate the time that you've given to me and your willingness to be pretty candid in discussing what it is that you're trying to do. I mean, if I can offer you any encouragement, is just to keep doing it. I, as a passive observer, I enjoy the sketches even when they're not of me. And I mean, as somebody who is similarly trying to do some kind of creative work and put it out there, for public comment, I'm inspired. I think that's, you're doing something that's difficult, and I hope you keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. It's fun to get a chance to talk about it.
All right. Good. Well, I'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Yep.
Bye-bye.